appeal to the spirits. Through the high windows, the soft morning sunlight streamed into the picture gallery of the Keeper of Knowledge, filling the exhibition with a gentle radiance. Not a single painting found its place here by chance. Each canvas was a vivid example of objective art and contained the truth, which could be perceived by all senses with the guidance of the Keeper of Knowledge. Today marked the appearance of a new painting. The Master's disciples had already gathered around it, examining the tiniest details with curiosity, debating, and making assumptions about its meaning. The painting depicted a shaman in traditional shamanic attire, performing a prayer. His feet were spread wide and slightly bent. His body was gathered, and his palms with outstretched fingers were raised to shoulder level. His face conveyed complete concentration and focus. His eyes were wide open. His mouth was open. Spirits swirled around the shaman. The gray-green earth spirit, emerging from the rocky terrain. The rebellious golden fire spirit, rising from a blazing bonfire. The turquoise transparent water spirit, soaring above turbulent waves in the mighty elder. The air spirit, hovering above the taiga. Absorbed by the painting, the students didn't immediately notice the silent appearance of the Keeper of Knowledge in the hall. He patiently waited for the students to settle down and asked a question, smiling as he looked into the eyes of each chosen one.
My dear students, I see that you have already noticed the new painting in our temple. What do you think is depicted in it?
I think it depicts how a shaman calls upon spirits. I noticed that this shaman engages all of their senses in the practice. Eyes, mouth, hands, body. All senses are working at maximum capacity,
replied a blue-eyed student in a wide orange shirt with Indian patterns. He had known the master for a long time and tried not to miss a single class.
You are right, Emil. Indeed, this depicts an invocation of spirits. This is how a true prayer should be conducted. When the whole body is involved in prayer, then the prayer will be powerful. Our spiritual strength depends on the involvement of our body. Therefore, if you feel that the prayer is weakening, you should stretch, activate your energy so that it goes in the right direction. If the body is sluggish and weak, it cannot support our intention. The energy does not flow, and nothing happens,
said the Keeper of Knowledge.
Beloved teacher, looking at this painting deeply resonates with me,
reverently said a young, slender woman in a black, shiny silk suit.
But I don't quite understand if my perception and understanding are correct. Perhaps I have missed something. For example, I don't quite understand how to pray in this posture.
The girl raised her sparkling, emerald-like eyes to the sage, hoping to hear an answer.
Mira, you have grasped the most important thing,
the Keeper of Knowledge replied with a smile.
You need to embrace the emotional state, deeply absorb it, and let it into your heart. This picture shows the emotional state during a strong and correct prayer. It demonstrates that every part of your body, every internal center, should be engaged. You can't just mumble prayer words mindlessly. The most important thing is to involve your emotions. Then the prayer will be effective. That's the essence of the new painting.
Thank you, Master. Now I will pay even more attention to my emotional state during prayer. I understand that it's the most crucial aspect,
Mira said, smiling at the Keeper of Knowledge. Several hands immediately shot up. With a nod of his head, the sage pointed to a tall woman in a red Greek tunic that reached the floor.
Teacher, please tell me, should there be a specific goal during prayer? For instance, should I visualize a particular spirit? After all, attention scatters if you try to visualize all spirits at once,
the student asked, looking at Sage with genuine interest.
Yes, Valeria. You should always visualize a specific spirit. It's best to invoke the spirit helper, the patron. If you're performing a prayer in a specific temple or a place of power, you can address the spirits of that place. For example, to the Ayami of such places, or the spirits of the elements, when it's necessary to appease the element or call for rain. And if you want to achieve a specific goal, you should also address the corresponding spirit helpers, the patrons of that affair. For instance, people turn to the spirit of wealth, Zayan Zaichi, when they need money, and to the goddess Choktal when harmony is needed in the family.
Master, I don't quite understand,
said the excited girl with straight black hair that reached below her waist and large chestnut eyes, resembling ripe chestnuts.
Since childhood, I thought that prayer was something calm, harmonious, and relaxed. But in the picture, the posture and facial expression seem too tense. When I try to attune myself to the state conveyed through the drawing, a deep emotional experience arises within me. An invocation to the spirits, like fierce plea for assistance. How should I pray correctly?
The teacher smiled at the young woman, radiating warmth, serenity, and tranquility through himself. Like fire, sparks of happiness spread from the teacher to the students. Everyone in the room could feel it. It was as if the sun itself had entered the temple and warmed their hearts. Sensing that the young woman had found peace, the keeper of knowledge began to answer a question.
Pauline, when a person prays with relaxation, they drift away in thoughts, in imagination. True prayer is always attention. How can one be relaxed when emotions awaken? The state should not only be peaceful or detached. The entire being must be involved in prayer. Completely. With full dedication.
Keeper of knowledge, does that mean that the vital body is also involved in prayer? Emil clarified.
Of course. Prayer should not only happen in the upper yakras, but also in the lower ones.
The sage explained.
Both the vital body and Manipura should be included. That's why the posture might seem tense. In reality, it's total involvement in the process.
Master, when I assume the posture for invoking spirits, my whole body feels a rush of heat. Is that how it should be?
With a smile, the elderly man, who already had silver gray hair on his temples, asked.
Yes, Wayne. The body should support every word, every vibration. If the body supports the prayer and helps us generate energy, then the spirits will hear us.
Great keeper, Emil spoke up again. When you mentioned vital energy, I realized that in regular prayer, there's no action, just reliance. A plea for the spirits or God to do everything for me. But here, the prayer invocation is essential, total. It's as if a call to the spirits arises out of hopelessness, but with a readiness to act and a determination to change.
That happens because the prayer takes place on all chakras.
The sage explained.
If we only pray on the upper chakras, we won't tap into the energy of the lower ones, and the prayer won't be as holistic.
Great one. I've heard that some representatives of different religions only pray on one chakra. Is that true?
Mir asked, with interest.
Yes, Christians pray only on the Anahata, Buddhists only on the Ajna. They engage only one chakra, which is why they receive less energy. But in reality, in prayer, you can engage all chakras and all energy, making the practice more holistic.
The sage concluded.
Thank you, teacher, for giving us the fastest and correct path.
Mira said, bowing her head to the keeper of knowledge.
Yes, master,
Emil added immediately.
I've been studying Christianity and Buddhism for a long time, and I often notice that the lower chakras in people of these religions seem atrophied, making them somewhat half alive. But here, when all chakras work, there's more energy, so the state is strong and complete.
Emil also bowed his head in a deep bow before the master. The other students followed his example. Each of them was happy that the keeper of knowledge had revealed to them the true nature of things.
I am happy for you, my beloved students,
the sage said, spreading his arms wide and seeming to embrace all the students at once with his vibrant, powerful energy.
Seek wisdom. It'll help you overcome any hardships and live your life happily.
At that moment, a tall, slender young man in traditional orange attire stepped forward. In the Keeper of Knowledge's classes, he was not just a guest, but also assisted in organizing.
Great teacher, when I saw you in nature, communicating with spirits, I personally experienced an incredible state, emerging with nature. I felt as though you were not separate from nature, but one with it. Keeper, how can we learn to achieve such a state of merging with spirits and God, as you do?
The student formulated his question.
It's a state that is absolutely unearthly. It can't be called human. It's divine.
Carl, I'm glad you remember that moment so well.
The Keeper of Knowledge said with a benevolent smile.
To achieve such a merger, we must be in an essential state. If a person is in a personal state, constantly thinking about society, other people's opinions, relationships, judgments, they're like sinking to the bottom.
Like a paper boat weighed down by stones.
Valeria added sadly. The teacher nodded.
Yes, if a person's mind is filled with all sorts of nonsense, they can't even relax in nature and open themselves to the spirits. They are trapped in a cocoon of false thoughts, problems, and misconceptions instilled by society. But when the personality takes a back seat, the person enters an essential state, sheds the framework of an ugly personality, and can then merge with the spirits.
A man with deep, light blue eyes raised his hand. His hair was gathered in numerous small braids on the back of his head, each adorned with golden beads. The sage nodded, allowing the student to speak.
Thank you, teacher, for providing simple answers to such complex questions. I long to learn to see the world through your eyes.
The young man said reverently with a melodic voice.
Could you please tell us about shamans? Shamans often help people, heal them, rescue them from difficulties, assist in various life situations. Does this mean that shamans interfere with destiny, relieve a person's suffering, and prevent God from carrying out his plan?
An excellent question, Eugene.
The Keeper of Knowledge said with a radiant smile.
We must understand that God created shamans, healers, herbalists for a reason. He created them to protect and assist ordinary people whose souls often wander and cannot find the right answers on their own. Shamans don't just help people, but also introduce them to spirituality, guide them, explain which rules a person has violated, why the spirits are angry with them, and why they send illness.
Great teacher, how did shamans come into existence in the first place? Please tell us,
Yuri requested, rubbing his hands together. It was clear that he was anxious to ask this question.
Shamans appeared in ancient times,
began the Keeper of Knowledge.
Deceased people watched from the heavens as their descendants struggled in their physical lives, wanting to help and explain everything to them, but unable to do so. That's why they asked one of their fellow tribesmen to become a shaman, to teach him how to communicate with spirits and pass on their guidance to people. They chose the most sensitive one, who was more inclined to communicate with the deceased, and began pulling him into the subtle level. At first, the future shaman was afraid, thinking he was going crazy, but gradually, he got used to the subtle level, and his ancestors explained everything to him, and he became a full-fledged shaman, a mediator between spirits and humans.
Master, is there such a great need for shamans? We have emergency services and hospitals now to take care of people. So, do we really need shamans today?
Pauline asked uncertainly.
There are situations where human abilities are powerless.
The Keeper affirmed.
For example, if someone gets lost deep in the taiga, no emergency helicopter can find them because the taiga is a vast, impenetrable wilderness. It would take many days for a helicopter to locate the person, and by then, they would succumb to the cold and perish. In such cases, only a shaman can help. Spirits inhabit them and show them where the person went astray. They give the shaman super abilities so that he can rescue the unfortunate soul.
Teacher, do shamans also help with healing?
Pauline asked again.
Yes, doctors are not always able to arrive in time. Spirits take over the shaman and provide the necessary assistance quickly. Shamans also assist in hunting, guiding the tribe to find prey to prevent starvation. Shamans help people in every aspect of life, and in return, spirits assist them.
The sage concluded,
Beloved Master, I've been wanting to ask for a while. In the shamanic book, there's a description of a hero traveling through different worlds and meeting shamanic gods. In one of the episodes, he encounters a Yami, who tries to seduce him and entice him to stay with her in comfort and abundance. But the shaman doesn't want to lose himself and escapes. He resisted the temptation of the cunning Ayami. I don't understand why Ayami acts this way. Why is she so cruel?
Valeria asked.
That's not quite the right interpretation.
The Keeper of Knowledge smiled.
Remember, for example, the tale of the Mistress of the Copper Mountain. The character described there is Ayami, and the shaman is Danila Master. The mistress doesn't actually want to kill or enchant him. She simply shows him her magical realm, gives him the opportunity to engage in creativity, carve bowls from precious stones. But if a person becomes too involved in this magical world, returning to the ordinary, gray reality becomes difficult. That's why the shaman was frightened, thinking that Ayami wanted to take him away.
Teacher, isn't there a similar plot in The Snow Queen? Mira asked. Instead of Ayami, it's the Snow Queen. Kai is entranced in her icy kingdom, and Gerda is a shaman who embarks on a journey to save him in the lower world, and she's overcoming various challenges and trials.
A smart observation, Mira.
The Keeper of Knowledge praised.
Many familiar fairy tales contain shamanic themes. However, due to state politics, it's not always possible to use words like shaman or deity, spirit. So they are substituted with others, and the plots are transformed into love stories.
Beloved Master, but Gerda rode on reindeer to save Kai. Is that also an analogy with shamanism?
A short, plump girl with brown, slightly slanted eyes and a wide, kind smile asked.
You're right, Anastasia. The reindeer is a spirit helper from ancient shamanic legends. However, the original legend cannot be published as it is. That's why the story was turned into a love tale, and the spirit helper became a reindeer.
The sage explained.
Teacher, I don't quite understand shamans.
Admitted a young green-eyed woman with large, round glasses with thick lenses. Her wrists were adorned with numerous thin, golden bracelets that jingled with every movement.
Reading shamanic stories, I couldn't help but notice that shamans often compete with each other, measure their strengths. Why not direct this power to help people? If shamans are chosen by spirits, why do they mindlessly spend their strength in meaningless rivalry?
Maria, it's good that you've noticed this.
The Keeper of Knowledge responded.
Usually it's the black shamans who do that. Those who serve Erlik, the god of the lower world. They compete with each other because their spirit is connected to destruction and conflict. They try to take each other's strength, claiming it for themselves. On the other hand, white shamans unite and serve Ulgin, the god of the upper world. There's no war or enmity among them.
Thank you for explaining, Master.
Maria thanked.
I was starting to think that all shamans are like that.
Teacher, I've heard that in some tribes, there was a tradition of eating the heart of a defeated enemy. People believed that this way, they could take their power. Is that true, or were they serving dark powers in this way?
Carl asked.
Indeed, in this manner, you can absorb another person's strength. But only black shamans practice this. They do take the power, but it ultimately turns into harm for them. They fail to understand that they should serve good and peace, not war and hostility.
Keeper of Knowledge, I'm a bit confused.
Maria turned to the sage.
In all shamanic stories and beliefs, there's this concept of power. Can you please explain how to understand it correctly?
Power is accumulated energy that a person holds within themselves. Perhaps you remember from the Mahabharata or the Ramayana, if a person follows certain practices, makes vows, and doesn't squander their energy needlessly, it accumulates and they can perform magical actions, like divination, for example. But only a person with great inner power can do this.
And do dark and light shamans have the same energy?
Maria asked thoughtfully.
Yes, the energy can be similar,
replied the Keeper of Knowledge.
But their direction is still different. If a shaman serves early, their energy is focused on destruction, conflict, and enmity. But if they serve Olgan, the energy is directed towards creation, harmony, labor, and helping others. That's why the results are completely different.
Great Keeper,
a tall, athletic man with colorful tattoos covering his body from his throat to his ankles, spoke up.
The concept of inner power intrigues me. I often hear phrases like call of the power or signs of power. Can you please explain what these mean?
Ruslan, it's great that you're interested in this.
The master praised his student.
This question is extensively described in Carlos Castaneda's books. In the world, there is the power of the eagle. It's the divine power that gives signals, signs, and guidance from above. If a person follows these, they become guided by the higher light powers. Unfortunately, people can be very inattentive, and even when they're directly told something, they don't always hear it. To catch such subtle signs, one needs to be very attentive and tune into the higher level. Be vigilant and conscious.
Thank you, Keeper.
Ruslan's face changed. It was evident that deep mental work was happening inside him.
Master, please tell us how to achieve goals correctly. Are there unattainable goals? If I understand correctly, every goal has some hierarchy. When you reach the required level of energy, does the goal become accessible to you?
The tall, tanned brunette with a short haircut asked the master.
If one never dreams of the impossible, then the possible is unlikely to happen.
The Keeper of Knowledge smiled.
Don't be afraid of big goals, Aisha. For big tasks, God provides a lot of energy. For example, when we take the Bodhisattva vow, which is leading all living beings to enlightenment, God grants us greater power. Since the goal is vast, the person is more engaged in it, and they have several times more energy to achieve it.
Master, could it be that a person has a lot of personal strength and energy, but due to their own foolishness, they don't know how to distribute this strength correctly and end up wasting it?
Pauline inquired.
Of course,
replied the sage.
Strength alone is not enough. Without wisdom and awareness, nothing will work. If a person has a lot of natural strength but has never encountered a tutor, a conductor of knowledge who will lead them to a teacher, they can cause a lot of harm due to their ignorance. To control one's strength and direct it for good, one must first gather wisdom.
So it doesn't matter if you have a lot of innate power or not. The most important thing is to be awakened, conscious, and not let others manipulate you. Is that right?
Aisha asked hopefully.
Yes, of course. The most important thing is for a person to be conscious. That's when their highest level of reason manifests. Only then do they become clear-sighted and view the world with open eyes. If a person is not conscious, they are blind and cannot see what's happening around them. For what use to have strength if a person doesn't see where to apply it? Such a blind person, out of ignorance, can start breaking and destroying everything around them. Until a master opens their eyes to the world, they will suffer from their own strength and make others unhappy.
The Keeper of Knowledge concluded and sighed heavily. He genuinely felt sorry for those unfortunate individuals deprived of wise guidance, wandering alone or, even worse, falling into the traps of false teachers.
Teacher, does that mean that comparing ourselves to others is pointless? the most important thing is to be awakened, and energy and talent are secondary?
Wayne asked. The master nodded in agreement.
Thank you for these words, master.
A timid girl in a knee-length light pink dress said quietly.
Before, I felt very insecure during the classes, constantly comparing myself to other students who seemed to have more strength and energy, and everything came easy for them. Now I will stop doing that.
Olga, envy and resentment are significant mistakes.
The Keeper of Knowledge gently stated.
If someone excels in something, take them as an example, learn from them, seek their advice. That way, it will be beneficial. But if we show envy and do nothing to improve ourselves, we simply waste our time.
Teacher, I don't quite understand. If everything depends on awareness, does personal power become unnecessary?
Ruslan asked, raising his bright light eyes toward the keeper.
No, Ruslan. Personal power still holds great significance.
The master corrected his student.
For example, if a person has a lot of strength, they can become more fortunate. Their inner energy will attract favorable events. But if a person is internally weak, luck will elude them. Things will slip through their fingers, and they will face bruises and setbacks. Therefore, it's important to accumulate inner strength so that it helps us maintain a good state. We should never forget about our inner strength. Without it, we cannot awaken. There must be a balance between strength and awareness.
I understand you very well, Great Keeper,
Valeria said.
That's exactly how it was for me before I met you. Everything literally kept slipping through my fingers. I walked around the house bumping into every corner as if someone was purposely pushing me into them, tripping over everything and breaking dishes. But when I started practicing spiritual techniques, saving energy, and meditating, everything stopped immediately. All thanks to you, teacher.
The girl smiled, and in response, the sage directed solar energy of unconditional love, strength, and acceptance toward her. Meanwhile, another question was already being raised.
Beloved teacher, please explain how we should accumulate power if it's given to us by nature. Does accumulating mean simply not squandering it recklessly, like on negative emotions or sexual energy, for example?
Eugene asked, slightly leaning his head forward.
Yes, first and foremost, we must cut off the waste of personal power on constant identifications, foolishness, and negativity, so our energy doesn't flow there. We also accumulate sexual energy and avoid squandering it in orgasms. We cultivate strong thoughts within ourselves and strive to perform strong actions.
Master, how do we know if our energy is going in the right direction?
Aisha inquired.
Based on our inner sensations.
The Keeper of Knowledge answered.
For example, if we start engaging in sports, our energy is spent. But physical strength and muscle mass increase, and our body becomes stronger. This means that the energy is going in the right direction. But sometimes we spend energy and end up weaker. For instance, if we spend it on grudges, jealousy, and so on. Such things only weaken us. We should get rid of them.
Teacher, can I clarify something? Is accumulated energy the sum of all the energies of the chakras? Is energy located within the chakras? Or does it work differently?
Olga asked again.
Not necessarily in all of them. Even if energy accumulates in just one chakra, it already grants greater personal power.
Great Master, I remember you once said that energy dissipates through attention. I've noticed that when I have many tasks to handle, my energy scatters, and as a result, everything goes wrong. But sometimes, when I distribute my attention wisely, I have plenty of strength and energy, and everything works out. What determines the outcome in such cases? I just can't understand.
Emil said with frustration. His face showed that he had been pondering this issue for a long time.
Emil, it depends on your state of concentration. If we focus well, we can manage to pay attention to many things. However, in a weak and scattered state, we cannot concentrate. Tasks remain incomplete, and we quickly become tired. It's impossible to do anything properly in such a weak state. Therefore, you must be in a focused, concentrated state to be able to cover more with your attention and accomplish more.
Keeper of knowledge, I'm a bit confused.
Confessed Anastasia.
When we experience negative emotions, do we lose energy and strength? But when we perform spiritual practices, do we gain it?
That's correct.
Smiled the sage.
But our inner power is determined by the planets at birth? Does that mean they determine the amount of energy within us? How do these two ideas connect?
The girl sadly lowered her gaze.
Both of these ideas are true. The planets indeed influence us with their energies, but the extent of their influence varies from person to person. It's a matter of luck. However, apart from natural predisposition, we also have our own inner power. If we consciously exert effort, we can increase our own energy. Conversely, if we make no effort, we'll lose what nature has given us. By eliminating foolish energy waste and focusing on genuinely important matters, our strength will increase.
A man with fiery red hair and a thick red curly beard stepped forward and asked,
"Teacher, can you tell us if increasing the amount of energy also increases the essence's power? Does this mean that one's essence can grow and develop throughout life if one consciously works on it?"
"Yes, Max, of course,"
said the Keeper of Knowledge, rubbing the centers of his palms.
"If we make efforts to become spiritually strong, it happens. It's just like in sports. If we build our muscles and train, we become strong and healthy. If we don't make the effort, our body weakens and becomes prone to illness."
"Thank you, Master. But I have another very important question. Can charged objects somehow help with this? Does personal power depend only on the efforts one makes, and are additional objects just support?"
"This is a very interesting topic,"
exclaimed Valeria.
"I've heard that amulets carry the energy of the teacher with them, and this energy later helps achieve certain goals. Is that true, Wisekeeper?"
"An amulet indeed carries a certain energy within it. It can be given by a shaman or some spirit. But if a person doesn't start working on themselves, making conscious decisions, and striving toward their goal, even the most powerful amulet won't help them."
The sage sighed deeply. The topic touched him deeply.
"Unfortunately, some students collect amulets of power like souvenirs, but never really engage with them. They just gather dust on the shelves and provide little benefit."
"Teacher, can we communicate with all the spirits at once?"
Emil asked the Keeper.
"You don't necessarily have to communicate with each one individually. You can keep amulets on an altar and address them collectively. The key is to set the intention for communication and interaction. Prepare yourself for a powerful act, and then carry it out. That's when the amulets will truly work, rather than just sitting idle, especially if the teacher or their conductor has blessed the use of the amulet. In that case, the person will receive not only the amulet's power, but also the support of their teacher."
"Beloved Keeper of Knowledge, I wanted to ask how to prepare oneself to avoid losing strength in challenging situations. I sometimes succumb to negative emotions, a habit of my false self,"
Olga confessed, embarrassedly wrinkling the tip of her belt.
"Olga, this problem is quite common. You are not alone,"
the sage said reassuringly, sending her support, warmth, and understanding.
"To avoid it, you need to prepare yourself correctly. Start feeling happy when you receive feedback and so on. It's important to understand that all feedback helps us grow, become better, and eliminate our shortcomings. If you take everything personally, this negative impulse will only bring you trouble. However, if you work with it correctly, take active action, positive changes will begin to happen."
"When we start working on a weak part of ourselves, a childhood program, our body starts to ache. Is this a lack of personal strength, or is it some energetic process?"
Olga inquired.
"Pain occurs when something is unusual,"
explained the Keeper of Knowledge.
"Just like when we work out in the gym, our bodies ache at first. But after several workouts, they adapt and accept the load. Keep developing, and with time, the pain will subside.
Great teacher, I remember that you created such a yoga practice in which by entering strong images, one can increase the volume of well-being.
Began the silent man in a light shirt. He usually preferred contemplation and rarely asked questions.
At one time, I thought that it was enough to use imagination to enter the image of Rama or Krishna and feel the qualities of these deities. But if one cultivates these images constantly, will it provide an opportunity for personal development, or is there a risk of losing one's mind?
I'm very glad you asked, Paul,
the sage said with a smile.
If we immerse ourselves in strong images, it greatly aids in our development. For example, if a person is a failure, it's only because their parents and society have instilled this in them. They've been given the wrong, weak self-image. If a person embraces this image and doesn't resist it, they become weak and helpless, an unwanted failure. But if they resist it, re-educate themselves and say, I deserve better. I don't want to be like everyone else. I want to be great, like Rama or Krishna. I will strive for that. Then everything starts to work out.
You're right, teacher,
Aisha said, lowering her voice.
When I was a child, my parents told me, your legs are crooked, you're ugly, no one will marry you. And I believed it for a long time. My parents even found me a husband, a neighbor who was a drunkard. They said, accept Les, no one will pay attention to you except him. I almost got married until I accidentally attended your classes and realized that I shouldn't treat my life and myself this way. I left home, pursued the sport I had always dreamed of. And now, everything is fine for me. I have a good husband, a family, and hobbies. All because I listened to your advice in time and identified with a strong image while rejecting the weak.
We're all very happy for you, dear Aisha,
the sage exclaimed, his eyes shining with love and deep, genuine joy for his student. The sun rays were already turning pink, reflecting off the new painting in the temple's hall. But the questions kept coming. The painting touched the heart of every student, and everyone wanted to ask their question to the master. The eldest student quietly stepped forward. She timidly looked into the eyes of the keeper of knowledge, hesitating to ask her question, but with just one glance, the teacher understood her and offered her the floor.
Thank you, beloved master. In the parable of the old man Zosima, there's a scene about a minister who feared dying from a terrorist's bomb. The old man threw a ball of yarn at him, and he left his body, entering the embrace of warm light. I empathized so much with the character when I read this that it was as if light entered me through this experience, and I was able to share the hero's impressions. Please tell me, how does empathy work? What triggers it? And is there any benefit to it? Or is it just my vivid imagination?
Rosa, when a vivid artistic image is created, a person becomes deeply involved in the narrative. This is how it should be. That's why it's crucial that if we have any good stories or images, we immerse ourselves more deeply in them. Then we will gain the experience described there. But for this, strong emotions need to be engaged.
Teacher, isn't that how propaganda works? Am I correct?
Eugene clarified.
Yes, that's why many people were shown patriotic nonsense, that there are heroic paratroopers out there. People deeply empathized with this, thinking that they themselves were tough paratroopers, and they ended up falling into the networks of political propaganda, heading straight to Afghanistan. So it's essential to pay attention to what we experience and empathize with. There are ugly stories, ugly books, that can hypnotize us. Through this empathy, people are turned into mere puppets. We need to pay attention to the information we receive and not let ourselves be hypnotized by nonsense.
Teacher, may I ask, what is spiritual experience?
Paul asked again, It was clear that the topic had deeply affected him.
For me, it's like the practical part of physical life, where I have to make the right choices and use them for personal growth. For instance, I can watch a film about monks praying, and it becomes an experience for my soul. Does that help in development?
Certainly, Paul. Because a person can't personally experience everything. It would take many years, many millennia, and a human life is short. Therefore, we can't understand everything ourselves, but we can learn from the experiences of others.
But it's important what kind of experience is conveyed in those books and movies, right? Most books should be thrown in the trash without regret, because they're filled with all kinds of ugly programs.
Aisha said, even blushing slightly from the overflowing emotions.
For example, Anna Karenina, which they force on children in school?
Carl added.
They instill the idea that you should hang yourself, lie on the train tracks, and go through all sorts of nonsense. Then people read all of that and become as ignorant as the characters.
You're absolutely right.
The Keeper of Knowledge concluded.
When a person reads spiritual literature, they gain spiritual experience. They learn that it's possible to react completely differently. For example, to stop fearing death. They show that paradise awaits after death, its life on a subtle level. Yet they were afraid to leave the coarse material world and clung to their identifications with all their might. They understood everything and began to build their lives on different values, striving more for elevated emotions than anything else. So it's very beneficial to read such literature, watch movies, empathize, and gain new experiences along with the heroes.
Teacher, did I understand correctly that if you just read something, it's theory? But if you read and become emotionally involved, it's an experience. Or do you need a situation to happen to you personally to gain experience?
Rosa clarified.
Experience is what we go through in all three centers. Emotional, intellectual, and physical. If we deeply experience it in all three centers, we gain experience. If it's only on the intellectual center, then it's just information. The person is informed about something, but they haven't deeply experienced it, so they remain a theorist.
Great Master, you have such an important mission on Earth.
Ruslan exclaimed with admiration.
You lead us all toward enlightenment, showing the right path in the darkness. But I don't understand. We're all souls of different natures and different levels. Some of us may have been a bug in a past life, while others may have been great kings. Does it not matter what a soul's past is? If it comes under your wise influence, can it still attain enlightenment?
One can attain enlightenment, but effort is required,
replied the Keeper of Knowledge.
I simply create a favorable opportunity for a person to attain enlightenment, but they must make an effort to use this opportunity.
Yes, if there's no teacher, there's no opportunity for growth. People don't even know that enlightenment is possible. They don't know which books to read, how to break free from false programs.
Sadly stated Mira.
Teacher, do dark powers exist only on Earth, or do they exist in other worlds too? In other words, do humans develop only on Earth and can they reach God? Or are there dark powers on other planets that also put people and other beings to sleep?
Max asked with interest.
Dark powers exist everywhere. They exist on the entire physical level. Only on the subtle higher levels, they cannot exist. So on the physical level, on the etheric, vital level, dark powers can influence us. But on the astral, mental, higher levels, they cannot.
Explained the Keeper of Knowledge.
Do dark powers exist where other beings live or only with green humans?
Olga naively asked.
They exist everywhere.
The sage calmly answered.
In other galaxies, there is also a physical world. And if there's a material world, then dark powers are present. They are only absent in divine worlds where angels dwell.
The Keeper of Knowledge bestowed the students with such a piercing, loving gaze that they all felt themselves elevated to the level of the angelic world, completely free from the influence of dark powers, in a state of clear consciousness and unity with all that exists. Today's conversation lasted until sunset, but not a single student felt tired. Long after the departure of the Keeper of Knowledge, they stayed in the art hall. They examined the new painting and once again discussed how they managed to apply the knowledge. The enthusiastic experience of their newfound truth inspired the students. They could listen to their teacher forever. Many of them were ready to receive a new dose of knowledge right now.
Do you want to know more? Watch the animated masterpiece that reveals the mysteries of humanity. Discover more sacred knowledge in books. You can meet the main characters of books at our seminars. Find your amulet of power. Participate in an individual ritual. Open free channel with daily spiritual practices for yourself. All these you will find on our website www.amazon1.org. Share this book and spread the great knowledge. Then people's lives will change for the better, and you will accumulate good karma and be able to help all your loved ones.